Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Dr. Stuart Squires. I'm the Associate Director of the Center for Faith and Culture and Associate Professor of Theology at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. The Center for Faith and Culture brings the Catholic voice to the ongoing conversation about the meaning of life and the liberty and pursuit of happiness we hold in common as Americans. Today's guest is Blake Pellerin. He is the president of Arrows RFC, which is a Catholic community with the purpose of forming men in Christian virtue through competitive rugby. So today we'll certainly get to talking about Arrows RFC, but in light of the Super Bowl, which is right around the corner, I thought we would have a conversation in general about sports and Catholicism. So first of all, Blake, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Stuart. I've been listening to some of the episodes that you've been having and putting out, and I think they're great. So I'm thrilled to be here. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much. In preparation for our conversation, I went back and reread a document, which I would recommend to all of our listeners. It's from the Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life, which is part of the Vatican. So this document has some gravitas to it. It came out in 2018. It's not that long or heavily burdened with sort of theological vocabulary, and you can get it online for free. It's called Giving the Best of Yourself, a document on the Christian perspective on sport and the human person. So I'd recommend all of our audience listeners to check that out. And I think, Blake, why don't we start with something that's sort of in the title of the document and is expanded on in the document itself. Again, the subtitle is A Document on the Christian Perspective on Sport. The document goes on to talk about how John Paul II in 2004 created the Church and Sports Office, which is interested in exploring a sort of Christian vision of sports. So how would you, Blake, how would you characterize such a vision? How can or should Catholics think about sports or view sports differently than the dominant American culture?
Sure. Well, I think that the biggest thing that stands out probably to most of us, especially here in America, is how mainstream and dominant that sport can be, especially from the commercial aspects. And reading through that document in particular that you're talking about, was it doing your best or giving your best? Giving your best, right? It's clear that from the Christian perspective, sport is for something. It's ordered to or we should be ordering it to help us grow as a person and grow in virtue. And I really really appreciate the way that that it really points towards the game itself being something that is of the end of it is itself to be a good, to be something that we enjoy, but is used and viewed kind of in perspective as a microcosm. I would say the way that I describe it a lot, especially for the sport that we play, is it being a microcosm of life itself, right? Because you have challenging moments, tense situations, you're in kind of this pressure cooker of activity that can represent what it is to be out in the culture and in regular life too, on a daily basis. So, but back to the perspective we have as Americans here is just Super Bowl is a perfect example of what sport can look like when you really commercialize it and use it for, and not that commercializing sports inherently bad. However, if it's used as the document, you know, talks about, I think at length, is if it's used to promote certain ideologies that are malformed or with malintent, then it can be very dominant and very, it can be very good at achieving those ends. And that's dangerous, especially when we idolize sports, themselves.
Sure. One of the things that caught my attention was, a discussion the document had about beauty and sports and the transcendentals of truth, beauty, and goodness are something that I've been thinking about for a few years now. And Bishop Robert Barron comes to mind when he talks about the way we in the 21st century should evangelize is first through beauty and not through goodness or truth, because in this postmodern world we live in, truth and goodness are sort of rejected as relative. And the document says, just to read a sentence here, sport can offer us a chance to take part in beautiful moments or to see these take place. In this way, sport has the potential to remind us that beauty is one of the ways we encounter God. So when you think about sports or watch sports or play sports, how do you think sports are beautiful and through that beauty can be a chance to encounter God?
I think that, in talking about a lot of the ways that Bishop Barron approaches the culture too, I was thinking about just that, is to approach with beauty and then to, and then to draw people into what the gospel might mean, especially at those key moments when it's time to share. And when questions are asked, you know, deeper questions that penetrate to that level. I think that people are attracted to excellence and beauty in general. In the work that we do, you know, a lot of it's having to do with men being attracted to excellence and beauty. And I think in sport is very much the same, because watching something, watching or playing something, you know, with movement is something that I think is, as humans, we want to move towards perfection, right? We're called to communion, and you know, just as we think about our faith, God is always calling us to a deeper communion with Him. Well, so is the same in how we feel called to want to be better humans, and sometimes in sport, that gives us the opportunity to really dig into understanding what our bodies are meant for. And understanding how we can train them, how we can order them to achieve ends, and not necessarily that they, and well, I think importantly that the ends not ultimately be the perfection of our ability as an athlete, but that is an opportunity or an area that can train us in greater life, I guess. So being able to watch or play a sport, and I mean, you know, there's just stuff that you watch and play where it's just, man, that was just a beautiful passage of play. Or, you know, I'm going out of my realm of experience here, but if a tennis player, you know, has a beautiful serve that just, you know, can't be returned, or if going back to football, let's say if a wide receiver just makes a beautiful catch that, you know, it took him three attempts and the cornerback was all in his, you know, all defending in his face and getting around that, or in rugby with a beautiful passage of play with the ball working through hands and a team working together to eventually score a try.
Certainly can you think of any experiences in your own life or stories recounted to you by somebody else that you know, where an encounter with beauty and sports led them to an encounter with God? I'm thinking, you know, when I was growing up, and especially when I was in college in Chicago, Michael Jordan was sort of winning championships, his last two championships, and you know, watching him dunk a basketball is about as beautiful of anything you can see in sports. And I certainly appreciated that, but at the time I certainly didn't make any connections between the beauty of Michael Jordan dunking and God. So how can we think about that connection between those two things? Do you have any experiences or any reflection on that?
I mean, I can think of a couple of experiences just in the past year, just within our rugby club. If you look at just any time in sport, when you look at, you know, the elements of what an underdog might be, or when you're coming from behind and the cards are stacked against you, and if you're down by, you know, however many points, comebacks are always a really interesting perspective. And I think that, you know, some of my favorite saints are St. Paul and St. Augustine, and particularly because they were such great sinners, and I do not mean, obviously great doesn't mean good, but that they were great sinners and violent against the faith. In fact, in Paul's case, for example, but them coming to Christ and making those conversions and coming from behind, let's say, to becoming some of the most common saints that we model our lives after and talk about and continue to spread the tradition that we've been handed down from them. That's a big story. That's something that we can all relate to, I think, because we know what that feels like. We know what it feels like to be so far down and need God's grace just to bring us up. And I think so coming from behind maybe is a big storyline in sport that is just so captivating and beautiful when it happens. Personal experience within the past 12 months, our rugby club played a couple of games where we came from behind, and on the last play of the game, ended up scoring tries, you know, similar to a touchdown in football would be a big score achievement there, but scoring tries at the very end of the game as time expired in order to win the game. So we were down and won the game at the buzzer, basically. And one of those games, we were actually down by probably four or five tries at halftime. So at halftime, we were down. We had scored no points in the first half, and the second half we just kind of pulled it all back together and started working as a team to come back and again scored on, you know, the last play of the game with a beautiful bit of flash too. It wasn't just your traditional ground and pound. It was as you would in football or something. It was there was a little bit of a flash and pizzazz in there too on the last play of the game to score. So but when you see that, you know, you just go, I mean, there's just no, you know, there's no logical way this regularly happens.
Pope Francis is quoted in this document, and he's got a great sentence, which I think bears some unpacking. He says, engaging in sports rouses us to go beyond ourselves and our own self-interests in a healthy way. It trains the spirit in sacrifice, and if organized well, it fosters loyalty in interpersonal relationships, friendships, and respect for rules. I think there are several things we could talk about. So why don't we just start with the first part when it says that it rouses us to go beyond ourselves and our own self-interest in a healthy way. How would you say that sports can or should be able to do that for us?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, and it's funny because whether it's a team sport or an individual skill or sport that you are working on yourself, I think that's very much the truth that, you know, it really takes you beyond yourself. I mean, I think it talks a lot about, so let's just talk about preparation itself. So once you, like, for example, even growing up, you know, I remember being, driven to baseball practice by my mom and my dad. And there's those support roles, right? And at the time, you know, you don't really think about how much effort, or at least I didn't think about how much effort that was, that mom and dad really had to put themselves into, driving you to practice every single day. And so that's always interesting because, you know, there are already people that are supporting you and helping you get to have fun, but also kind of train for life a little bit. And so, you know, already you're doing something that's not just you. It's not just you that got you there.
But in terms of going outside yourself too, whether, you know, if it's an individual sport, for example, and you particularly excel, as, you know, Simone Biles, for example, comes to mind, and only because she is an outstanding gymnast that is, you know, now is all over, you know, commercials and all that stuff, but she stands out a lot. And so in order for, well, let's just say that however she lives her life is going to be interpreted however people perceive it, right? So yeah, I mean, there's really a number of different levels. Certainly, there's a lot of ways that you have to think about what you're doing on the field actually translates to a lot more off the field in addition.
Another part of that sentence there, it says that sports can foster loyalty in interpersonal relations, friendship, and respect for rules, which I think everybody would agree with that. I guess my question would be, how do sports do that differently than something else, such as if you were in a theater group, or, you know, when you're in high school, you had a job or you joined a band. All of those things, I think, can do that as well. So the question is, what is it that's qualitatively different about sports that fosters loyalty and interpersonal relationships, friendships, and respect for rules?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. Because to your point, I've been in bands, let's say, and, you know, been a part of, you know, Spanish club and whatever else it might be, where you have those relationships and you get to build relationships with other people based on a common interest, and you do work hard together to make things happen and host events for fundraising or, you know, play in a show or whatever it is. But I think, you know, like, for example, if we're going back to the document that we're talking about here, you know, they kind of define sport. And I think the big thing that sets it apart is movement, is the, you know, is the movement that you really work on and train. And I think, you know, when you work on that, whether it's you individually, with a trainer or with a team as a whole, you know, there's a lot of bonding that goes on with that too, because, you know, you're kind of realizing that your body can do these things in conjunction with another who is training, I guess, at the same clip with the same objective and the same goals in mind. But in sport, you know, which in that starts to make me think also about, like, you know, some military movements as well. But I think in sport, obviously, the pressure of, you know, the pressure of life and death isn't quite, oh, well, although, you know, there is certainly the risk of injury in sport. But it's not, you know, it's something that you're doing for, I guess I say for fun for the most part, or at least properly ordered, we'd be doing it mostly for fun and not, completely, professionally and making it the ultimate end. But,
are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions? Like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. So, of course, we are fallen because of the original sin. And so, therefore, we would expect that there's going to be a sort of dark side of sports. So I think we need to recognize that and sort of talk about some of those issues. Of course, the first of the Ten Commandments is that you shall have no other gods before me. And this points to the perennial problem of idolatry, which, of course, theologically speaking, is not just worshiping other gods, but it means having anything that's at the center of your life that's not God. And it seems to me that in the sort of dominant American culture today, we've fallen into the sin of idolatry with sports, among other things, but including sports. So what are some concrete ways that Christians should be the prophetic voice to our culture so that we'll pull back from this idolatry?
Yeah. I think that, I mean, you're 100% right. And I'll just, you know, just to tack on an example, I went to Texas A&M and I was in the Corps Cadets there, and Aggie football is a religion, you know, in itself. Right. And, not to make too much light of it, but it seriously is and can be. And it's not just Aggie football. I still think Aggie football is great. I love it. But I have had times in my life where it was up there to be number one of everything that happens. There are many mysteries about this universe that we have not even tapped into or understood to exist. And so to pretend that these fun sports and these fun games that we created, you know, oftentimes through his assistance and his influence, you know, they are not the ends themselves. They are not the ultimate cause. They are not the first mover. they need to be properly ordered. And I think the church has had a keen understanding of that since the very, you know, since the very beginning. It's been written into the law since Moses. So, you know, physically written in. So, I think the church certainly should always help remind us of that. And so I think it's important to bring that perspective to the fore. And obviously, very obviously, that's not always the case. And so that's a place where the church can, and I love the way that they talk about it in the document that we're talking about too, is the church is at home in sport, and sport is at home in the church. We can step into that space, and we can bring our faith into that space and contribute greatly to sport by properly ordering it where it belongs, which is certainly below our priority of God being our only God, and not treating sport as an idol of itself.
It's often said that playing sports builds character. And when I hear people say that, I think about a quote which has been attributed to John Wooden, the great UCLA coach, but I don't think he actually said this. And he said that, well, the quote says that sports don't build character, they reveal it. What do you think about this idea of sports building character, especially, you know, it seems like on a weekly basis, at least with professional athletes, we see something in the news about something, you know, that they did that's really horribly, you know, really horrible, if not criminal. And so you would think, well, if sports builds character, then all these professional athletes would have, you know, really great characters. So how do you think about this idea of the relationship between sports and character?
Yeah, I think the first, my experience at St. Thomas High School, for example, is, you know, I remember one of the first experiences I had training for preseason football was where one of our coaches said, you know, the quintessential line that it's basically character is who you are when no one is looking. That's another interesting layer to it, is to consider that, you know, that sports don't necessarily build character, but that they reveal character. And I think, you know, a lot of that comes out of the fact that sports challenge you, right? They test you and they challenge you to test your mettle, I guess. I mean, there's a certain amount of training that you have to put in, and you have to spend time working on your craft physically, mentally, and then you must bring that spiritual aspect in there too. And when you get to competition, then you can really see, I guess that's a good point, is you can really start to see who has been putting the work in, you know, whether that's together as a team or individually in their own training. And a lot of that depends on the character to put the work in when no one is looking, you know. And a lot of times that can be physically and the way that you appear to be working. But also, I think spiritually, in your interior life, you know, do you have a prayer life? Are you communicating with God on a regular basis and bringing Him into your experience there too? And I think that especially in competition, but also just in your day-to-day training, that you know, the physical aspects, the mental, the spiritual aspects, I think there's definitely something to that. That it certainly will reveal whatever character you're building up.
You've mentioned several times a phrase that I love, a sort of Augustinian term, the idea of having something rightly ordered so that sports can be flourish, help us flourish when it's rightly ordered. And one of the things that this document talks about is the sort of disorder of sports when it becomes ordered towards economic gain. So here's just a small quotation from that. It says, "The great importance of sport for many can degrade it into becoming a vehicle for other interests, for political purposes and demonstrating power, for the blind pursuit of financial profit or nationalist self-assertion. In this way, the autonomy of sport and its internal goods are threatened. Interests that are no longer sporting interests, but rather political, economic, or media related, then begin to dictate the dynamics of sport and even the experiences of athletes themselves." I think we could spend the entire episode just talking about those different interests, but for the sake of time, I want to focus in on the economic interests and how economics often do distort the beauty of sport. So in what ways are interests such as money distorting sports, and how can we as Catholics be the prophetic voice to help sort of repair sports in this way?
Oh yeah. So, well, I mean, the obvious things, especially in American sport, are, yeah, again, how commercialized they are. Now, I mean, every sports organization, well, every organization, I'd say for the most part, needs to, you know, there's going to be a baseline level of expenses. There's going to, and then there's going to be some opportunistic spending that you have on either, whether it's, you know, equipment that you want to get so that you can improve the performance of your athletes, or if you want to acquire some land so that you have more space to do something, or whatever it is, there's always going to be opportunistic stuff out there that you really want to pursue in order to improve the situation of the club. Ideally, those aspirations are you know, properly ordered. But, you know, so there's always the baseline of expenses. And then, but, you know, it's interesting between the for-profit and nonprofit models as well. You know, you got to make money to run a business. And so some of that's going to be revenues through, and I'm just thinking for, you know, amateur club side of things, but part of that's revenues from membership, from supporter membership, and then sponsorship or partnership with corporate partners. So, yeah, I mean, the document goes in detail, I think, about how important it is to ensure that what you're doing as an organization is in line with the values that you are, well, in line with your values and the objectives that you have as a club, and that they actually go together or align with any mission that you might have. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's very clear to see that various organizations, whether they be individual club or team environments or sporting leagues across the country, can be very influenced by the economic, by some of the commercial partners, the corporate sponsors and people that go into it. And at some point that becomes less about developing the human person holistically and more about a display of what the body can do. I mean, you almost hearken all the way back to gladiators, right? It's yeah, there's a lot in there for sure.
You'd mentioned earlier that you went to Texas A&M and the sort of relationship between the school and football in particular. And certainly in our public discourse, we in the past few years have been talking a lot about the idea of amateur sports and should the athletes in college be paid or are they being exploited? And I don't think that's a bad question, but to me, that's sort of the wrong question or the wrong first question for us to discuss. And the question that we should be talking about, which I don't think we are, is should universities have sports programs at all? I mean, we've talked about how the problems of when economics or political interests or power interests or nationalist interests step in and distort sport. I think we also need to talk about how sport can potentially distort universities and the missions that they have of education. So what are your thoughts about the role of sports in colleges? Should we even have college sports programs?
Amen. That is a very large question. And being an Aggie, I think that I can look at my own university to see just how my gosh, the economic powerhouse that Aggie Athletics is amazing. Now, you know, how much for the good is that? You know, I guess, you know, the big thing at A&M obviously too, is that they, and I don't know all the inner workings, so I'm not speaking from a place of expertise or anything, but, obviously they do a lot of research in the institution, in the university system and all those things too. But I'm also coming from the perspective of having played club rugby at A&M, and being an Aggie football fan for my entire life, including now. So I love to see them do well. I wish they were in the national, you know, in the college football playoff right now, but, or excuse me, I guess, by the time this will have wrapped up, you know, they'll probably be Alabama touting the trophy, but that's a whole other discussion. I'm getting on a tangent. Yeah, I think that so it's interesting because playing club rugby at A&M, I could see how much if there was just a basic amount of revenue, if we had in the rugby club like 1% of the expense budget that the Aggie football team had, I could almost guarantee national championships every single year for Aggie rugby. So just to look at things like now, football is the dominant sport in America and everybody wants to play it. And, you know, it's really interesting, but you just look at the development of what the purpose is. And I get, you know, you can make the argument, an argument can be made anyway, that the, it being such a huge marketing tool to bring people into the university is, you know, is a good thing. You could use that. You can make that argument. But at some point, I think, you know, some people really need to make some big decisions and be talking about what kind of good that really brings to the university as a whole and what good that does for the players that work through the system itself, too. Because, I mean, look, you know, you look at the varsity programs for you know, the varsity football programs are basically training grounds for the NFL. You know, I considered walking on, and my dad walked on at A&M as a football player when he was there. And I considered walking on to the football team as well, or at least trying out. But it was a completely different game by the time I got there in the late 2000s than my dad played in the 80s. And so, you know, you just look at what that's doing to the program and to the people that are working in it. It is a profession.
If you were the president of Texas A&M University, would you have a football program?
I would, but I don't think I would have it look like what it looks like right now.
What would you do differently?
Oh, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, well, if I was, I don't know. I mean, I would have to understand the inner workings and all that stuff. But I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't know what needs to be done exactly, but I don't, it's a tough question for me to answer because I don't know.
That's what we do here. We ask tough questions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think
I admit I put you on the spot there, but I mean, I would argue that the place to begin is not as president of any university, but it's in the culture that fosters that, which is precisely what we in the Center for Faith and Culture are trying to do, right? We're trying to shape the culture, which then shapes individual, you know, presidents of universities or football coaches or whatever it is. So, you know, I know I put you on the spot there, but I think, you know, especially we as Catholics need to ask those tough questions. You had mentioned that you'd read this document and you've obviously been a sportsman yourself for many years. So were there any takeaways that you had from this document or anything that made you change your mind or think differently about sports having read it?
Not necessarily differently. I think just kind of given me some really good context to kind of work within. Cause I didn't realize, you know, I had been looking for stuff like this. So I really appreciated you sharing it with me, but I've been looking for some more context about the sport and what it can do, you know, in the context of faith and how we can approach sport in that way. I mean, the big things that stuck out to me are things that we've talked about here already, especially the economic dangers that can come from idolizing the sport itself, properly ordering it, but also using sport as a way to holistically develop, you know, your human life and who you are as a child of God. It's just a great opportunity. It's a great way to do it. And there is, I think the other thing too, is there is no denying it. There's no arguing with it that it is captivating and that many people are intrigued and intrigued by it and attracted to it. So that is the place that the church, you know, is always happy to step into and offer its perspective and its understanding of what's been revealed to us. So, yeah, I guess those are my thoughts.
Let's shift our conversation a little bit. Why don't you tell us about Arrows RFC? What is its mission and what is your role with that organization?
Sure. So Arrows Rugby Football Club is a Catholic community with the purpose of forming men in Christian virtue through competitive rugby. So we are both a Catholic community and a rugby club. So we are, we're 501c3, so we're a charitable organization here within the state of Texas. And we're also recently recognized as a private association of the faithful, which is basically fancy word for an independent lay apostolate here within the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. So we're very excited by that recognition by His Eminence Cardinal DiNardo. And so that's who we are as an organization from the starters. We started back in 2016. I'm the second president of the club. I got on pretty quickly after the founder got it off the ground. Mike Shad is the founder, and he was the first president of the club. And I jumped on pretty quickly in 2016. And yeah, so I serve as the club's president now, and it's great stuff.
How would you, if this is a Catholic rugby club, how is it Catholic? What do you guys do differently than if I would join a rugby club that doesn't have a Catholic flavor to it?
Yeah, so most rugby clubs will have a director of rugby, or that is someone that basically leads the standards, the best practices of on-field rugby play and also off-field programming for our training, all that stuff. Our rugby club, I would say a unique aspect of that is that we have another club officer who basically mirrors that role as our apostolate coordinator, or the person that runs all of our formation programming, our spiritual formation programming as a club. We kind of model our formation programming after the church's wisdom in you know, the liturgical calendar. We have we have three or four programs, kind of scheduled spiritual formation programs that we do. Currently, we're going through our scripture study, our Advent scripture study. I think our last session is going to be this evening, leading into Christmas. And so in the fall, oftentimes what we'll do is some kind of scripture study or some kind of programming, like we did one year was the, from Ascension Press, they have Oremus. It's basically working on your spiritual, on your prayer life, and working through Lectio Divina and different ways to approach scripture. So a lot of times in the fall, we'll do something a little hands-on with scripture like that. And in the spring, what we did last year was what we called Arrows Tales, which is basically a sit-down, one-on-one conversation interview with one of our men, one of our rugby players. And it was an interview of their faith journey, of their faith story. And so just talking about, you know, the challenges that they've had and there may be some challenges that they've had with the faith and belief in general and kind of how they have come to their faith in Jesus Christ as well and their faith in the, you know, in their journey into the Catholic faith. Sometimes it's a conversion story from a different religion. Sometimes it's simply a conversion of heart story or a reconversion story. But those are always fun because they're in a more social atmosphere. Usually we get the guys together and we have, you know, a couple of beers and a meal and it's a nice environment. It's very inviting. And then in the summers, we usually go for, philosophy. We've got one of our, virtue sessions. So like last year we went through the cardinal virtues, just session by session, sitting down for a couple, you know, for an hour and a half or so. And just digging into it and relating it to sports, specifically to rugby, too.
Final question. If somebody's interested in learning more about Arrows RFC or contacting you to become a part of that, how do they find you online?
Yeah, they can find us at arrowsrugby.com. So www.arrowsrugby.com is our website. We're also on Facebook. So facebook.com/arrowsrugby. We're on Instagram at the same ending of the URL. We're on LinkedIn, actually. We have a LinkedIn page as well. And yeah, that's probably, those are the best ways to get us. People can also feel free to email us at club@arrowsrugby.com. That's club@arrowsrugby.com. And we're always happy to chat with people that might be interested to either play for us or support the club in general, come out to some of the games and hang out with us for our formation sessions. And of course, you know, always interested in finding corporate partners or supporters that are interested to share their brand with us too, and kind of partner with us on that side.
Well, Blake, thank you so much for your time, and enjoy the Super Bowl.
Sounds great. You too, Stuart.
Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions, like who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas.